Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the landmark voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Landmark, go on.
This is different, isn't it? You weren't expecting me to say this.
I don't actually know what you mean, landmark voice of goalkeeping.
So full transparency here, of course, you and I, before we do the show, we have a briefing about what we are going to discuss. But sometimes I withhold a little bit of information just for that authentic, that spontaneous reaction that I'm getting from you right now with a puzzled look on your face.
Puzzled. We like to keep things fresh between us, don't we? So a little bit of spontaneity is good from time to time, but I'm a little bit concerned as to where this is going.
Okay, guess what?
Go on.
Today, Richard,
yep.
This particular episode, Richard, marks... the 100th Goalkeepers Union podcast.
There you go. How did I not know this?
Can you believe it?
I can now. I knew we were getting close. Is this 100?
We are 100 up, and everybody still refers to it as that Richard Lee goalkeeping podcast, which is fine. Not a problem. We'll just brush past that one, shall we?
Hopefully it stays that way.
I'm kidding. Of course I am. I'm but a conduit.
Indeed. Well, do you know what I thought you were going to say?
Go on.
The apologetic voice of goalkeeping this week, because I do have a couple of things I wanted to bring to the table before we get cracking. By the way, today is going to be the most content-filled show we've ever had. This has been the biggest briefing we've ever had. I think the briefing's actually been longer than the show's going to be.
It's a mammoth show.
It's a huge show.
We have got plenty coming up, but before we get to your apologies,
yeah,
I'm going to lift something from under my desk right here.
Okay, are you going to shake it as well?
There we go. And I'll tell you what that is. That is a big container with... that is a list of all our esteemed patrons.
Ah.
So everybody who has joined the Goalkeepers Union Patreon movement, you are in this big tin right now. Richard Lee is going to wash his little hand around in the tin and pick out a name. And that name is going to win. Guess what?
Go on.
A GKU mug.
Oh.
Tell you what, Rich.
They even know they're in the draw.
Oh, they've just found
out. I've just found out. All right, okay, let me have a little... oh, lots of names.
Oh,
okay,
I'm going to pull full to the brim.
One. Are you ready? The winner is... I can't read your writing, Matthew. I think it's Apu Vyas.
There we go. You are the winner. Thank you, Apu Vyas, for one, being a patron, and two, entering our competition.
There you go. Competition I had no idea about. What a way to start the show. And a big thank you, by the way, to those that have joined Patreon. Of course, with the costs that are involved in this, it is appreciated. Can I apologize now to those that I feel I need to apologize? This has been weighing heavy on my mind. I've got two apologies to make. I just want to get them out of the way.
Right, go for it. So the first one is to do, quite incredibly, with an incident we discussed last week. This is brilliant. Go on.
Well, I feel like a judge that's just condemned someone for no reason, no evidence. So you brought to the table last week Mr. Asmir Begovic bringing down, or supposedly bringing someone down, and we had a little bit of fun with the reaction, and ultimately it was quite costly for Bournemouth. They lost the game because of that penalty. Anyway, I then had evidence sent through. In fact, we had it both on Twitter and I had it personally from Asmir himself, and I stand corrected. He didn't touch him at all. So we've done a whole thing about how Asmir's brought him down, how it was incorrect as to who they sent off. Steve Cook, wasn't it, who they sent off. And actually, there was no touch whatsoever. So the reaction now makes even more sense because there was no touch. So first apology, Asmir, I am very, very sorry. Second apology is for chewing gum during games. I felt like I was endorsing it last time. We've had comments on this. Should you chew gum during a game? Absolutely no, you shouldn't. Yet I do realise that in the last episode I was making a bit of a joke of it, that several goalkeepers I know, and this is true, they do chew gum during games, but of course you shouldn't. Imagine making a save and you've got gum in your mouth. That could lead to bad things. So absolutely, I do not endorse that.
Yes, we had a few tweets in about that, a few messages. Should we be chewing gum during games? Surely, when there's a collision, because that is something we were taught as kids, wasn't it? Don't chew gum. And then when you saw them chewing gum, you always thought they're going to swallow that. Or the whole... remember back in the day, everyone used to swallow their tongue.
Who's the Italian
people don't swallow their tongues
no,
anymore.
No, they don't. That's gone out of fashion, hasn't it?
What happened to that?
That was like a big thing for a long time. It was just a classic thing. Now it's like hamstring injuries, whatever. It used to be swallowing of tongues. Maybe. I have no idea. No explanation. Is there any physios listening in? Do tell us why no one swallows their tongue anymore.
What Italian goalkeeper?
I'm thinking of the Italian goalkeeper that used to chew all the time, and it's going to come to me and it's going to bug me again. If you know who that was, tweet us.
Zenga? Palnuka?
I think it was Walter Zenga, you know. Is it? I think it was. He just would always be chewing. And thing is, that sticks with you as a kid. You're watching a goalkeeper do that. That does stick. I get the pun there. I didn't even mean that. But it does. It sticks with you.
All right, Richard, we have plenty coming up. Like you said, we are going to be reflecting on all the Premier League action. Some big stuff last night as of recording, of course, Bernd Leno and the goal that never was from John McGinn. We won't dwell on that too much because Villa won 3-0, so it didn't really matter. Aaron Ramsdale, we're going to touch on a bit more of Edouard Mondi, some Carl Darlow stuff from the game between Newcastle and Southampton. Jordan Pickford back in the headlines yet again. And plenty more FA Cup action as well, of course. It was a big weekend, FA Cup first round. So plenty coming up. If you want to join the debate, very easy to do so. At GK Union on Twitter. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. Okay, Arsenal Aston Villa. A convincing win for Villa at the Emirates, but they could have been up inside a minute. John McGinn with a very decent strike beyond Bernd Leno. You'd think he had no chance, but Ross Barkley was impeding his vision and therefore the goal was disallowed. Or was Ross Barkley impeding his vision? Now, I want to very quickly say here that we should pick our battles on the Goalkeepers Union, and sometimes we are much maligned for perhaps being too defensive of goalkeepers, and the fact that Aston Villa won 3-0 means that this particular scenario doesn't really make that much of a difference to the final result, but we will touch on it very quickly. And before I come to you, this went out on Twitter to ask whether Barkley was impeding and whether the goal should have stood. And it was pretty convincing from those who responded. Marcus Pedley, it was a shot, not a pass, not offside, and also not across the keeper. Villa 1874, he's blocking Leno's view, so disallowed, correct decision for me. HCon says, should have been given. Christopher B, absolutely. And Jimmy says, no offside, Leno was never saving it.
Without wanting to sound like I'm sitting on the fence too much, I can see both points of view, because he's never going to save it. But then what I would say, it then makes a difference. So let's say that had bobbled in the corner, and because he was impeding his vision, we're all saying then, how's that not been disallowed? So does it matter what happens with the shot? If your vision's been impeded, then the decision has to be made before the shot is taken. Does that make sense? So whether it flies in the top corner like it did, or whether it bobbles in the corner and it would have been saved, the decision is, if it's impeding your vision, we'll never know. Do you know what? He might have done something superhuman in that moment and pulled off the best save we've ever seen if he could have seen the ball. He might have predicted what was about to happen and moved early and actually got up into the top corner. Now, look, of course, I'm being slightly facetious here and he wouldn't have made the save, of course. But does that matter? Surely that then is an irrelevance. It's about, if your vision is impeded, if you're behind a player that's offside, then it has to be disallowed. So for me, it's the correct decision, but I'm not for 1 second saying he would have saved it. Does that make sense? The only thing I can liken it to is, and I don't want to go too deep here on, like, often it's the result that will then be what is given. So let's say, you know, if someone does a crime, it's often the result of the crime, not the intention, if that makes sense. I'm not going to give examples here. So it's then, does the result matter or not? Do you know what I mean? The fact that it's flown in the top corner, does that matter? Because ultimately he has been impeded. So surely the decision has to be made before. If he's been impeded, it has to be disallowed.
Is this kind of one of those sort of weird tangents that you got? Is this like, I kind of feel like you're saying, if a tree falls down in the woods, does it make a noise?
It kind of is going along those lines. But right, I've got examples. I don't really, it's a fun show. I want to keep it lighthearted. So I'm not going to.
If no one's there, I've messed it up as well. Of course, a tree makes a noise. If a tree falls down in the woods and no one is there, does it make a noise?
Yeah, that classic question. Do give us your answers on Twitter. No, I've got examples. And again, it's a lighthearted show. I don't want to touch on them now. But often it will be the result of something will then dictate what the decision is. But I just think in this, the decision has to be made at point of impact. He is impeded. He cannot see. So he might have, again, I know he wouldn't have made the save. There's not a goalkeeper in the world that saves this shot. But he might have read it and gone early, for all we know. And he might have tipped it over the bar if he could get a vision of the ball. So I do think it was the right decision for that reason.
Okay. Apart from that, Bernd Leno did make a very good save from Jack Grealish in the second half. And you say what a save. Jack Grealish said what a save, didn't he? Brilliant save from Leno. But even better goalkeeping from Emi Martinez. Was an Arsenal goalkeeper, of course, now with Aston Villa for the third goal, collected a cross and fantastic distribution to Grealish.
Well, look, one of the things we pride ourselves on this show is that we will find the smaller details. Now, a lot of goalkeepers listening in, and they will appreciate this because I know a lot of you guys do this all the time and it won't necessarily be noticed. But for me, it's the precision. It's the fact that it's a good cross. It's a good decision. Good decision to come out, take the cross, the speed at which he distributes. And all it is an underarm roll. But it's the fact that it's perfectly weighted. It's in the path of his player. And of course, they break and they score the goal from there. And I think that it's these details that for me are so, so important. Like, it's very easy just to catch a cross and just sling it out to a fullback without giving any real thought as to them receiving the ball. And it's something that you'll work on in training, you know, whether it's an overarm throw, an underarm bowl, a javelin throw, whatever you decide to do, but to do it with that precision and to pride yourself on being like that when it comes to your distribution. You know, it's not just good enough to hit an area anymore. You're trying to hit a specific part of the field in order to make it that much easier for your teammate to come onto the ball or right into their feet or their chest or whatever it may be. So for me, it was just the fact that it was so perfectly weighted, and this whole goal thereafter was just brilliant. It was so smooth, the way in which they then moved through the thirds and finished in the way they did. So I just wanted to highlight that because, again, the funny thing was we then watched the highlights. You mentioned it to me. I'll be honest, I've only seen the highlights of this game. So you mentioned it to me and we put the highlights on. They didn't even show the cross collected, didn't show it being bowled out. They actually just started the footage from when the fullback receives the ball. And that's, I suppose, part of the problem. People don't notice these small details sometimes. But on the GKU podcast, that's what we do.
Tom Heaton, if we're talking about Aston Villa, did put out a tweet this week to say he's nearly there, nearly back. That's great to hear.
Yeah, fantastic. Had his injury problems. Be interesting. I think they've got a really good goalkeeping department now. I'm going to put that question out on my Instagram soon. Who has the best goalkeeping department in the Premier League? And I'm just putting it out there now. Aston Villa now, you would say, has to be up there. Obviously, Neil Cutler. They've had several goalkeepers come and go over the last few years. Of course, Nyland has now been released. But when you've got the likes of Jed Steer, Tom Heaton, and of course, Martinez doing what he's doing now, that is a fantastic goalkeeping department.
Aaron Ramsdale back in the news for Sheffield United, comprehensively beaten at Stamford Bridge. He got a bit of stick for the first and the second goal in this game. And before I come to you, I'm going to go to Chris Wilder, who we know is quite an outspoken character and did speak out regarding Dean Henderson last season, especially when he made that mistake against Liverpool at Bramall Lane. Now, after the game, Chris Wilder said, "We had a young goalkeeper last season who made mistakes, and that's the road we're going down, so we have to stick with it. We're conceding some poor goals at the moment, but he," that's Ramsdale, "will come through it. He's a positive character and a very good young goalkeeper playing in a team that's not doing too well at the minute."
Yeah, and actually, I like the fact that he's come out and said this. It's, do you know, for me, we spoke about this in previous podcasts, and I feel like we predicted this to an extent. And in a similar way in which we talk about Mondi, I'm getting his name right now, a similar way we talk about Mondi coming in for Chelsea, and he's coming in with that positive energy, I felt like it was always going to be hard for whichever goalkeeper was to replace Henderson at Sheffield United. Now, it turns out it's Aaron Ramsdale. It's always going to be so, so difficult because after the heroics that the team produced last season, I'd say pre-lockdown, because they weren't quite so good when they came back from lockdown. So they've been struggling for a while now, it's fair to say. And I think whatever goalkeeper came in, they were going to have a tough time because Henderson really did raise the bar. Fantastic couple of seasons. Leaves that club with legendary status, let's face it. So I felt like there was always going to be a little bit of negativity towards whoever came in. The fact the team has started the season quite poorly, I think then has impacted Aaron Ramsdale in that I don't think he's done particularly badly so far. If anything, I think he's arguably been one of their best players so far. But it's interesting, the vibe towards him as the game's going on, the commentary that's being given is not particularly positive. And I want to go into a bit of detail on the first two goals. Well, in fact, the first goal, absolutely no chance. Absolutely no chance. So the fact that, I think it was Jamie Carragher, I think, suggested that he might have been at fault. Unbelievable.
Is it because the strike wasn't clean from Tammy Abraham? I mean, is that what they're clutching at?
I mean, that's the only thing they could be clutching at, but it's still gone past them at pace. And actually, the trajectory of the ball, because it was smashed into the ground, there is no goalkeeper that saves that, as far as I'm concerned. Or if they do, we're doing a whole episode on it, because it would be an absolute worldie of a save. So, yeah, for me, I thought that was incredibly harsh. Now, the second one, I can understand why he got some criticism for this, but I can also understand exactly what's going on in Aaron Ramsdale's mind as this cross is delivered. Brilliant cross.
So it's Hakim Ziyech, of course. He floats in the cross and it hits Ben Chilwell, doesn't it? It's the second goal, really, that everybody was focusing on. Jermaine Genus, in his punditry, said, everyone's standing still and waiting. Aaron Ramsdale should be commanding. He should be taking the ball and taking everyone out. Now, this is quite interesting when you consider certain challenges that have been in the news recently.
Well, this is it. There was a similar comment made during the game itself. And instantly, where does your mind go? All right, well, that's exactly what Jordan Pickford did last week or 2 weeks ago. And we're still talking about that now. In fact, we're going to be talking about Jordan Pickford again because there's been some comments about another challenge that he's made. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say that the goalkeeper should clean everyone out, which is such a cliche, by the way. If you're going to come for a cross, take everything. Well, no, that doesn't work anymore because apparently you do that or you clean everyone out and you're in the headlines for 2 weeks. So no, that's nonsense for a start. Look, this goal, are the goalkeepers that come for that cross? Yes, there are. There's a reason why Aaron Ramsdale didn't. Look, the fact that it's finished from 2 yards, it doesn't look good. I appreciate that. But do consider it's 2 yards to the side of the goal. Where's the goalkeeper's starting position when the cross comes in? It's the centre of the goal. So it's not that Aaron Ramsdale has to move 2 yards. If he's to cut out the cross, it's more like 6 yards because of the arc of the ball. So it's not 2 yards for a start. He's got to move quite a distance in order to do that. Now, I understand what he's done. Because the ball was never that high, he never felt like he could really catch it at the highest point. So what he's done is he's watched it come all the way around and decided to spread at the far post. Now, quite often you make the save here and it just so happens it's bundled over the line. It doesn't look particularly good, but I fully understand why he hasn't come. How many times have we seen it where a goalkeeper might come for a cross like this, someone nips in front of you, heads it in, and then we're blaming the goalkeeper because they didn't get the cross and someone's got there before them. So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. I felt for Aaron Ramsdale on this. And then, of course, what happens is then people then focus on a lot of the other things. Well, actually, he made several good saves in this game. Fantastic cross for the third or the fourth? The ball that was whipped in. And that classic one where he does then come, but of course someone nips in ahead of him and then people question that. But for me, the only thing I would say on Aaron Ramsdale was just the body language for me. He looks stressed. You know, the ball goes in, you can sense the anguish on his face, which is natural. And there's a couple of goalkeepers that are experiencing this at the moment. He's an incredibly strong character. For me, just needs to keep his head down, keep doing what he's doing, keep growing, keep improving. He's 22 years old. He is so far ahead of where he should be at this stage. He's just got to keep his head down and keep doing what he knows right because he's got some incredible qualities. And for me, he will be England's goalkeeper, but he just needs to ride through this as best he can.
So we had a few tweets in as well, a couple of people tweeting. A guy called Steve Lawton said, I'm sorry, but Ramsdale is nowhere near good enough for the Premier League. It seems some agree, some don't. It's all about opinions. I feel that he makes too many errors at this level. He's shown that over the time he's been in the Premier League. Paul Sheridan actually came back and said, one poor game doesn't make him a bad goalkeeper. He's been brilliant for Sheffield United this season and was Bournemouth's Player of the Year last year. I just want to come back to you on something you said last week, I think, or the week before, when Robert Sanchez came in for Brighton. Now, Robert Sanchez is 22, so is Aaron Ramsdale. You said you were quite surprised that Sanchez had made the leap to Brighton's first team because he'd been on loan in League One, in League Two, in the previous campaigns. Aaron Ramsdale spent a season on loan at AFC Wimbledon, a very good season, and they will continue to compare every single goalkeeper they've had since to Aaron Ramsdale. But after that season at AFC Wimbledon, he stepped up straight into the Premier League. I was quite surprised last season that he was chosen as Bournemouth's number one. Does any part of you think that maybe it has been too soon for him?
I would have loved to have seen him do a season in the Championship. But the fact that he came in to Bournemouth's team and he kept his place for the entire season, again, he's 1, 2, 3 steps ahead of where he should be at this stage for me. For me, the perfect next step after Wimbledon would have been to go to a top Championship club. Look, effectively like Dean Henderson did. You know, Dean Henderson, by the time he played in the Premier League, had already racked up, I want to say 150 or so games at a lower level before doing that. So, and the other part to it for Aaron Ramsdale is that he's now been in a struggling team for quite some time. Even Wimbledon, he joined them. It was actually halfway through the season at Wimbledon, he joined them and he helped them make the great escape. But of course, he joins them when they're down the bottom, when they're in the relegation zone. So I think a key point is that he has always been in a struggling team. Now, how's that going to affect you mentally? You're in a team that more often than not loses than wins. I don't know what his actual track record is in terms of wins against losses, but it will be more defeats than wins. Now, that will start to impact you at some point. I don't know if it has yet, and I get the impression that he is a strong enough character that he will just come through this and he'll be absolutely fine and he'll bounce back. But of course, that's going to impact you to an extent. I would have loved to have seen him have a season in the Championship, but ultimately he skipped that stage out, and he did very, very well for Bournemouth. Supporters Player of the Year, I think, from memory last season. Did very well for Bournemouth last season. But let's remember, he is 22 and he still doesn't have that many professional games behind him.
At the other end, Mr. Mondi, who we've spoken plenty about recently, didn't quite equal a Premier League record of becoming the fifth goalkeeper to not concede a goal in his first four Premier League games. Quick pop quiz. Who were the three that he was trying to emulate?
Oh, I'm going to go with... in fact, I do know one of these. Manninger, Alex Manninger.
Correct.
Fantastic. Go on, who else?
Alex Manninger is one. Pepe Reina, of course. And Anders Lindegaard.
Really?
Yeah, there you go. Must have been his first four games for Manchester United, I'd imagine. He also, Mendy, apparently he missed out on a record. I've tried to do a bit of research on this, but I can't find the actual stats. A record that was held by Willy Fatty Falk, the famous, notorious goalkeeper from the early 1900s. That's when he was at Chelsea. I think it was 1905-06. Very different game back then, but if the record stands, the record stands. And actually, that is an extended podcast for another day, Willy Fatty Falk.
Yeah, well, apparently at one point, I did hear this during the commentary, that he got to 25 stone at one point. Mm. That's fantastic.
There are so many myths around Willy Falk about... You know, who ate all the pies? Apparently that comes from him, but again, a myth that's not 100% supported. There's another clean sheet story. Some great stories, and maybe we'll get a football historian, a goalkeeping historian on the show and do a pod for another day.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, just to touch on Mr. Mondi. Look, solid enough. It's interesting. There was a couple of moments where he's a little bit untidy. A save to his left that spilt out, but he got on the rebound. There was a cross that was difficult trying to push someone off in order to get a punch. But he does look very commanding aerially. The more that I'm watching him, very, very commanding aerially. And it is just that calmness. It's expressionless, I would say. And I touched on Aaron Ramsdale, where you can see he looks a bit pained at times. A couple of other examples. Jordan Pickford at the moment looks a bit pained at times. For me, Mondi looks incredibly calm in everything that he does. So the impression that I'm getting so far is that's the big thing that he has brought to Chelsea team. I actually did put it out on my Instagram. What has he brought to Chelsea? And a lot of people were saying that. It is just a calmness. And again, he did give that aura in this game. A couple of untidy moments, but generally another solid performance.
Commentary corner. Now, we had a chuckle about this before we came on air because it's a beaut, this. Alan Smith has done a couple this weekend. He is the focus of Commentary Corner. Great game between Southampton and Newcastle on Friday evening. And a great save from Carl Darlow to deny Oriol Romeo. It was a shot from outside. We've seen a lot of these saves, actually, over the course of this weekend. The sort of top-hand saves, just tipping it over the bar. Alex McCarthy made a very similar save from a header a bit later on in that game. But Darlow made a brilliant save from Romeo on the replay. Alan Smith, has he got the slightest touch? Whether that made a difference, I'm not so sure.
Incredible. And actually, you're right. The three saves we're going to discuss, and we're actually going to touch on all three, all in the same top corner, all very similar in terms of the technique, all phenomenal saves. And of course it's going in. The fact that there's a touch and it hits the bar, of course it's going in. So huge credit to Carl Darlow. Brilliant save. Alex McCarthy then emulates that. Superb save. Again, the technique, the power. You talk a lot about top hand, low hand. These have to be top hand saves. There's no way that you can save them any other way, in my opinion. Brilliant save. And then, of course, there was the fantastic save from Kasper Schmeichel as well, which I've got a feeling that might have made Commentary Corner as well.
To an extent, it has, yes, because before we get onto it, is it something about when it's an obvious save that's made? So McCarthy's was more obvious. It was a clear save. Kasper's save, which we're going to get onto, a clear, obvious save. With Darlow, because you could only just see the fingertips. With the other two, the reaction from the commentators at the time was, what a save! Absolutely brilliant save from McCarthy, from Schmeichel. with Darlow, he wasn't given that credit because it almost wasn't seen.
I think because the ball deviates so slightly, it's only when they do the super slow motion replay that you can actually see that the ball has changed ever so slightly when it's touched the fingertips. And maybe it doesn't look quite so impressive when you don't get the big firm hand and all the histrionics that come thereafter.
But then you get hammered for producing a save for the cameras. Yeah. So again, you can't win as a goalkeeper.
One of the big things I wanted to touch on in this particular episode is, and I'll use the word dangerous territory, I feel like we're in, where the likes of Aaron Ramsdale getting any sort of criticism for that first goal, where these three saves, all for different reasons. In fact, McCarthy did get a lot of love for his save, but we're going to touch on Kasper Schmeichel as well, because I tweeted about this, Roy Keane saying that he would expect his goalkeeper to make that save. We're in dangerous territory because we're now getting to the point where some of the best saves I've seen this season are now becoming expected. And a goal where you've got absolutely no chance, or if you were to save it, it's going to be a worldie, you're now starting to get criticism. It's like the bar's moved. It's like the bar for what is an okay performance for a goalkeeper is now suddenly an 8 or a 9 out of 10. If we're saying that the Kasper Schmeichel save is a save that is expected by a manager or by a pundit, we've got no chance. The cleaning them out is another one, which they're going to have to stop saying now. Because of the whole Pickford thing and Van Dijk and the fact that that really split opinion, they're going to need to stop saying that because that doesn't apply anymore.
Great way to finish his birthday week as well, Schmeichel. 34 this week he turned. Wow.
Is that right? For me, and I know I touch on him a lot because I just think that very rarely, he had a couple of errors actually during lockdown, didn't he, if I remember rightly, when he came back. But it was such a big thing, like we were talking about it, because it was so unexpected. But I love watching him play. I just think that the aura he plays with, and he is, again, here's another cliche for you, big saves at big moments. You know, he makes the big save. That, for me, the other day, and I put it on a tweet before the Roy Keane tweet that I put out, that for me is the best save of the season so far. And it's the fact that it wasn't just the technique, the power, the top hand. You watch it from behind the goal and it's the slight movement he makes before the shot because he's anticipated it. Goalkeeping intelligence for me, that he's read exactly what's going to happen and he's executed it perfectly. That's going in the top corner. There's not another place in the goal he could have put that and scored. Kasper Schmeichel was making that save. And for me, it is a world-class save and got nowhere near the credit that it deserved, especially in the moment as well. You're 1-0 up, what was it, 10 minutes to go, and effectively that wins them the game and puts them top of the league. That should be the back page headline.
It is over to Jordan Pickford, a familiar story, Richard, because yet again, we are talking about Jordan Pickford, not so much for his goalkeeping ability, but the fact that he is in the news. Now, we're going to get on to what I deem quite vitriolic abuse, if I'm honest, directed towards Jordan Pickford over the weekend, yet again, for an incident with Harry Maguire. Now, I'm going to get your opinion on this because we've had some decent traction on Twitter as well regarding the incident. A cross was floated in. Jordan Pickford went to collect it. It appeared as though it was quite obvious that Harry Maguire put an arm out on Jordan Pickford's chest. Jordan Pickford spills the ball, then tries to redeem the ball, isn't able to do so, and actually floors Harry Maguire in the process. On Twitter, the reactions we got on this particular scenario were Christian Kellermeyer says, knocked him off balance slightly, easily done when both feet off the deck with the momentum carrying you. He knows where the line is and is doing his best to keep the ball in play. George Hyde says, foul all day. Centre-back does that to a striker, it would be given, so no difference. Alan Scholes, slight push, but he still dropped it and was lucky to not get a foul for the soft challenge on Maguire. I guess two wrongs equal a right on that one. Andrew Thomason says 2 feet off the floor at full stretch. Any contact on him is going to cause a distraction. So no foul for me. Lorcan Healy doesn't see much in it, but when you're in the air, any slight touch does have quite a large effect. Just a thought. Chris Parker, in these days, it probably is a foul. It's soft, but it's an obvious hand by Maguire, of course. And David says, I'd say a foul because he's off the ground, but not much in it. In my opinion, he needs to be given a rest. His head must be up his backside with all the media attention he's under at the moment.
Well, I had a message actually sent through. So Mackenzie Chapman, young goalkeeper at Oldham, in fact made his debut very recently, and he sent me the rules on the FA website, which says a goalkeeper cannot be challenged by an opponent when in control of the ball with the hand. And look, I've got one question. Why is Harry Maguire pushing Jordan Pickford? Give me one reason why his hand is on Jordan Pickford's chest. One reason. So this is an irrelevant conversation. Now, what's ended up happening that then, again, hasn't made Jordan Pickford look particularly good is, could he catch it? Yeah, he could. He could. But it's an irrelevant conversation. He's pushed him in midair for no reason. It's a foul. The bit that doesn't do Jordan Pickford any favours is the reaction, because it is panic, pure panic, which we've all been there. It happens. You drop a ball. What's your instant reaction? I need to get the ball. And that's all that's happened here is that he's been fouled. And he instantly comes out afterwards and you can see him saying to the ref, I've been fouled. But the reaction of panic and the fact that he swings his leg, I don't have a huge problem. I know this has been blown up in certain media to be more than it is. It wasn't a huge contact on Harry Maguire. And all he was doing, he wasn't trying to kick Harry Maguire. Of course, he was going for the football. Now, what would have actually done Jordan Pickford more of a favour in this moment would be the moment he dropped it would have been to either fall over and make out that he's been fouled or just put his hands in the air. Because at that point, then everyone says, oh, okay, yeah, Harry Maguire's fouled him. But the fact that he then reacted in the way that he did and he's got the pained expression on his face and you can see he's panicking, you can see he's out of control in that moment, doing what most of us would do in an attempt to get the ball back, that's what's then led to a lot of the comments. But I go back to my initial point. It's a pointless conversation because it is a foul from Harry Maguire. Such an obvious foul. When you see the footage again and you see the still frame of Harry Maguire looking at Jordan Pickford, not challenging for the ball at all, just with a hand on his chest, it's a foul. We don't need to discuss anything after that.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the comments that were made afterwards by the media. TalkSport actually put a tweet out. First Van Dijk, now Maguire. Pickford's done it again. How did he get away with this? With a still image of Pickford's knee in Harry Maguire's chest. But I know that they have a job to do, and I know that a lot of these accounts like TalkSport and some of these other Twitter accounts that you get clickbait nonsense, that's all it is. That's all it is. And it's so damaging.
Well, it is. The fact that we've just mentioned it now. That's why it's done. Look, I've said this before. I'm sure a lot of the stuff that Roy Keane says, he must be guided to say a lot of this stuff about goalkeepers. He has to. I hope he is in some ways, because I just think that a lot of the things that he's saying, we all know it's nonsense, but he's got me tweeting about him. He's got whoever tweeting about him. We're all talking about him. So I get why they do it, but it is damaging. And you know, the bigger picture, certainly when it comes to goalkeeping, and obviously I work with a lot of young goalkeepers, up-and-coming goalkeepers, the bit that worries me, and I go back to the fact that we've got a dangerous situation going on, is that if Aaron Ramsdale's being blamed for the first, if we're not getting credit for the three top corner saves that we touched on this week, then young goalkeepers aren't going to want to be goalkeepers. We need some positivity around the good stuff that goalkeepers do. Emi Martinez, brilliant distribution. That needs to be seen. Bernd Leno, fantastic save from Grealish. That needs to be seen. So these moments need to be seen in a positive light. And when things like that happen with Pickford, yeah, we can have our opinions, absolutely. But you mentioned the clickbait nonsense. It has to stop.
Few more games to go. We're going to touch on two games where there were moments at the very end of the games. The first one is the game yesterday involving West Brom and Spurs. Harry Kane got the winner late on. Sam Johnstone actually looked quite devastated, to be fair. Was it a mistake by Sam Johnstone? If he stays on his line, because he came out for the floated delivery, if he stays on his line, does that then just become a simple catch?
And this is where you look at it again, and I've watched this several times, and it's a horrible, horrible one for a goalkeeper, where when the ball's played in like that and there's not much angle on the ball, it almost feels like it's coming straight at you, it can be a little bit harder to judge. Now, the easy thing to say is that he should have come and punched it. I don't think you catch that ball, but you might be able to go challenge the striker, get your hands above and in front, and get two fists to the ball. It's an easy thing to say, but it is hard to judge the ball when it's coming like that. So the other decision is then to drop onto your line and then look to make the save, react. David De Gea does this all the time, very rarely comes, but what he'll do is he'll drop and look to make the save, make a reaction save. And obviously in the end, Sam Johnstone, you see it's a stutter forward, and the fact that he is caught somewhere in the middle then doesn't do him any favours. In the end, he hasn't been able to impact Harry Kane. He hasn't been able to have chance to react. And that's why he'll be so frustrated with himself. Again, we've all been there. Horrible situation. And in the end, of course, it's a good header from Harry Kane and it beats him.
So he did look visibly exasperated. Maybe that's because it was late on in the game. But should he feel like that?
I mean, look, Sam Johnstone's done a lot of good things this season, it's fair to say. You know, certainly a couple of games in particular. I want to say the Southampton game, he was fantastic. So it's just frustrating. It must be frustrating for him because he's in a team that are struggling to score goals, a team that are struggling at the moment. You actually look, they didn't win the last four games of last season, and now they still haven't recorded a win this season. It becomes more and more difficult for a goalkeeper. We talk about Aaron Ramsdale as well, where you suddenly have this mindset or this belief that you have to be perfect. And even then, that might only be good enough for a point. Even then, it might not be good enough for even a point. And I just feel, and you see this with a lot of goalkeepers, it becomes harder and harder where you go game after game without a win. And then, of course, more focus does shift to the goalkeeper, like it is with Aaron Ramsdale, like it is with Sam Johnstone. So I think it's more that than anything that he's feeling at the moment.
Okay, a bit more positivity over at the London Stadium. You just love to see it. Ademola Lookman steps up for a penalty to equalise for Fulham against West Ham, and he has an absolute horror show. Now, let's not pan him too much because we're quick, aren't we? We're the first to say, look, give these guys a break, especially when they're young. Lookman is a young lad, and he's taken a lot of responsibility on his shoulders to take this penalty. Mitrovic is the penalty taker for Fulham. He wasn't on the pitch at the time, but Fabianski pretty much just had to stand still.
Yeah, you do feel for him. I say you do feel for him, and I know he's come out and everyone's come out and slated him for the type of penalty. For me, it's just the fact that it's such bad acting. You know, ordinarily, the ones that do the Panenka well, they will run up to the ball in a very regular fashion. And it's almost like they drag the foot last minute and it's a lovely floated chip into the middle of the goal. The keeper's gone full stretch. And like, I've been beaten by several Panenkas. And when they get it right, look, it's great. But it was just the fact that as he's running up, he over-exaggerates the run-up so much and just gets the technique all wrong. And so for Fabianski, credit to Fabianski in that he is still able to react, but it is a very simple save in the end. And you can imagine every Fulham fan head in hands.
He kind of went from roadrunner to sloth, yeah, didn't he?
It was roadrunner for a second.
Elsewhere, we did mention a few weeks ago that because we've been away, I hadn't been keeping abreast of all the goalkeeping action, but we've got to say Areola, great performance for Fulham, despite being on the losing side.
Yeah, look, I want to touch on a couple of the saves that he made in particular. Just for me, we talk a lot about athleticism, reactions. He's up there. He's right up there in terms of the save he made. Good save from distance, ball moving on him a little bit, but it was the save he made, the reaction save that he made in particular in the first half that I wanted to touch on. Brilliant, brilliant save. And just the explosivity. You know, it's something that we don't really talk about too often, the reactions of a goalkeeper. It's almost a given that certain goalkeepers have similar reactions, but no, the reactions of this guy and the athleticism, the flexibility, yeah, really impressive. And now he's certainly solidified himself as Fulham number one, it's fair to say, despite the fact they've not had brilliant results. Yeah, he's looking the real deal.
On to Man City, Liverpool. Now, we had a tweet in from a gent named Cisse. Now, Cisse is a goalkeeper who plays for Kenningwell United. They are a well-established Sunday league team that play in the Orpington and Bromley District Sunday Football League. So that's worth mentioning. But Cisse tweeted us in regarding Edison and the fact that he can't seem to make his mind up at the moment as to what glove manufacturer he opts with. Now, he pointed out a tweet as well that was put out by Pro Direct Keepers a couple of months ago. 3 games into the season and Edison is already on his 5th glove brand. I think he was with Nike, wasn't he? So either he's had a falling out with Nike or something's gone on, but he keeps changing his gloves.
Yeah. Do you know what is incredible now? I spoke to a well-known glove manufacturer at the start of the season. The first weekend in the Championship, I want to say there was 18 different brands worn out of the 24 keepers, which is unheard of. Like, over the years, you'd have your major brands. We won't name names just at this point, but you'd have your major brands, and that was about it. But of course, you're seeing so many different brands popping up now. And I guess it's just an accumulation of that there are so many different brands out there. And if he's not settled on one yet, then he'll be trying a few different ones before deciding where he goes.
I've got a bugbear as well that I want to touch upon.
Go.
It's driving me bonkers. And this happened in the game yesterday. And it's been going on since the Women's World Cup a couple of years ago, where referees, and yesterday, Craig Pawson went up to Edison just before Mo Salah was due to take his penalty. Of course, Liverpool had a penalty against Man City that Salah converted. But before he converted it, Pawson went up to Edison and you could see Edison hold his hand out and say, get away from me. Go away. I'm trying to focus on saving this penalty. Pawson's basically telling him, stay on your line. Stay on your... Yes, referee, I am a professional goalkeeper. I'm an international goalkeeper. I know the rules. Leave me alone. I'm trying to be in the zone. And Pawson continued. Edison had his hand out. You could tell he was looking at the floor. He was trying to look anywhere but in the referee's eyes because he was in his moment. He was in his zone. And even when Pawson then walked away, he turned back round to Edison when he was on the edge of the box to say, make sure you're on your line, because Edison was obviously stood a yard behind his line, but you're not allowed to do that. So Pawson's still saying, I'm watching you. Get on your line. It's an absolute disgrace. It is an utter, utter disgrace, because if strikers or the attacker or the taker doesn't have an advantage already, crikey. What, it's just ridiculous. Leave the goalkeepers alone.
I love it when you get animated.
It just drives me mad.
I'll agree with you. Like, it is being more and more... it's more weighted in the taker's favour. Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when you're driving and someone's in the passenger seat and they're like, oh, watch that car in front. Watch that car in front. It's like, I can see that car in front. I'm not going to crash into that car. I can see the car in front. Like, he, exactly as you say, he knows. I know. Leave me alone. I know. But you're right. They do it every penalty now. And it's become a thing. And actually, we all go through... Look, this is all part of the show as well. You've got a penalty against you. We all have our different things that we do. Some people walk out to the six-yard box and they'll stand there for a little bit too long looking at the player in the eyes to try and put them off. Some will be talking to them when you're on the line. Some will be pointing in a corner, which that happened again this weekend with a couple of keepers we'll touch on in a bit. So there's all these different things. That's all part of the show. It's all part of the theatre. So when you've got the referee coming over and disrupting that... That bugs me as well. Actually, I'm with you on this one, Matthew.
Yes.
Ordinarily, you go off on one, you're chattering away like a little monkey, and I just let you do your thing. But no, I agree with you on this one.
We're finally in agreement, because all it takes is, well, they go right up in their face, right up in their space. All it takes is for the referee, because they stand aside, don't they, from the taker, to just say, on your line, goalkeeper, or name them, on your line, Edison. That's it. That's all it takes. Because then he's heard you. He doesn't need you going right in his face and pointing down on the line. He can see it. Like you said, you can see the car in front of you.
There you go.
Whew, just had to get that out of my system. To finish, Rich, we've had a tweet from Dan Cohen. I'm sure you saw the free kick from Eberiche Eze for Crystal Palace. Brilliant free kick against Leeds. Dan Cohen just says, watch that Palace second goal. I think that's what Rich is referring to when he talks about up, down and over the wall.
Yeah, fantastic. Nothing you can do. Unsavable. Brilliant free kick. So much height, dip. Obviously hits the bar, goes in. Absolutely no chance.
It's time, Richard, and in due course, there will be a proper jingle for this part of the show, but it's time for Richard Lee's Championship Rundown.
Indeed. Quick fire. Are you ready, Matthew?
I'm ready.
You're ready. Right, on Friday night, we saw Bristol City beat Cardiff. A good performance from Daniel Bentley. Hasn't kept many clean sheets lately, but his levels of performances have been excellent. Bit of a smash and grab, Bristol City, fair to say. One shot on target, and that was in the first minute, and that resulted in a 1-0 win. Then on the Saturday, Reading 0, Stoke 3. A mistake from Raphael, looking to play out at the back, and did get caught. Stoke running out, comfortable winners in this one. Birmingham 1, Bournemouth 3. Another win for Asmir Begovic. I'm sorry, once again. Blackburn 3, QPR 1. I have to mention Senny Dieng made some brilliant saves, one in particular down to his left. A fantastic save, but to no avail in the end. They did lose 3-1 to Blackburn. Brentford 0, Middlesbrough 0. I have to touch on Mr. Bettinelli, who's only conceded one goal in the last seven games, only 5-11 in the league for Middlesbrough this season so far. Also, a very good save from David Rea towards the end of the game in that one. Derby County 0, Barnsley 2. A mistake from David Marshall, which I believe we're going to touch on in a bit more detail shortly. Another good performance from Walton in this one. Big win this for Barnsley. 2-0 away at Derby. Derby struggling down the bottom. Huddersfield 1, Luton 1. Norwich 1, Swansea 0. Tim Krul, another clean sheet. He started this season very, very well, it's fair to say. Forest 2, Wickham 0. Want to touch on Ryan Allsop. Made a very good save in this one. Wickham, who had had three games without defeat, but of course did go down 2-0 in this one. Rotherham 2, Preston 1. Sheffield Wednesday 0, Millwall 0. Joe Wildsmith making that place his own for Sheffield Wednesday. Of course, Cameron Dawson starting the season there. And Watford 3, Coventry 2. An unusual goal in this one, a header from 20 yards, which beat Ben Foster. We'll touch on this in a little bit more detail, but effectively got attracted towards the ball. The header's then gone over him, but he's still moving forward. Couldn't get back in time, but in the end, wasn't too costly as Watford won the game 3-2. And also just want to make a note of Johansson, who did line up for Rotherham. Of course, Blackman normally plays. I believe he's injured at the moment, but Johansson did play for Rotherham.
You are like James Alexander Gordon on acid, my friend.
Thank you. I think that's a compliment.
Okay, you made some good points there. We'll start with Ben Foster, shall we? We're not going to go through all of them, but we'll start with Ben Foster first because we had a tweet from Sam Harris who basically said, what do you think of Foster's positioning here?
Yeah, I was watching Soccer Saturday, and when they said that it was a header from 20 yards, instantly you think, okay, this can't be great. But it was. It was an excellent header. I'm not quite sure. I'm assuming he's moving forward because the ball's obviously moving out of the box. So naturally your movement is forward, but it just felt like when the header was made, he'd still move forward. He took an extra couple of steps, and in the end that was costly. Now my thinking is that when he first sees the header, he's probably thinking, I'm going to come and claim this at the highest point. And then there's a realization that, actually, I'm in trouble now. And at that point, he tries to get back, but just can't get back in time. Look, great header, but I think it is one that Ben will look at. And in hindsight, will wish he had maybe just held his position for a split second longer. I think if he had held his position, then he might have been able to either tip it over the bar or make the save moving backwards.
You mentioned Raphael in the game between Reading and Stoke. Funnily enough, John Driscoll, who was the commentator just prior to this error from Cabral with his distribution, had said Stoke aren't interested in closing down when the ball is at the feet of the goalkeeper initially. As soon as he said that, Stephen Fletcher did start to press, and it was he who benefited.
I just think we're going to talk about another one, a very experienced goalkeeper in David Marshall, where there were similarities. I just think it comes back to risk and reward, and I appreciate that managers are telling goalkeepers to do this, so we can't necessarily pin all blame on goalkeepers because they're being told to do this. But I just think sometimes risk and reward, is it really worth the reward that you're going to get even if you complete this pass? And in this particular case, I just don't think it was. And it was a misplaced pass. And as we're seeing so often at the moment, he paid the ultimate penalty.
Okay, but you mentioned David Marshall there. Over to this.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Yep, Derby, Barnsley, David Marshall, Connor Chaplin with the goal. It looked quite comical.
I felt for him. Again, he's looked to play out. We talk about risk and reward in the last bit, and I just think this one, again, the fact he's tried to play out to the right fullback, he's misplaced it ever so slightly. It was then, as you do, you make that recovery run and you try and get yourself back into the goal as quickly as possible. I think the most frustrating thing for him in this particular instance is the fact that he didn't make it back to the goal, almost too much. And he ends up going past it, can't get back, can't get the tip round the post. Yeah, and it's just a frustrating goal. And it's actually by somebody who is ordinarily very, very reliable and has been over the last few years. And of course, and probably one of Derby's best players despite their poor start to the season. So he'll be frustrated with this. It was a big game for them as well, of course, against Barnsley, who were also struggling. So to lose 2-0 at home, I'm sure this one would have been a hard one for the team to take. And certainly for him personally, who as mentioned, has been pretty consistent to this point.
Yep, had made three very good saves before he actually made that mistake as well. That's it for the Championship. Over now to the FA Cup first round. Okay, this will be a Richard Lee rundown of sorts, but what I'm going to do is feed in the info to you, and then you're going to do your crazy buzz goalkeeper analysis stuff, okay?
It's like you serving me a volley to catch.
There you go. That's exactly what it's like. Now, as always, in the FA Cup first round, there were a number of decent goalkeeping performances. I like the FA Cup first round and second round because you see some of these lower leagues, some of these non-league goalkeepers really come to the fore. It's like a shop window, isn't it? And Hartlepool goalkeeper Henrik Ravas, a very good performance. 7 saves, unlucky to be on the losing side against Salford.
Yeah, in fact, and the highlights did show that. The fact that he was involved as much as he was, a big shout out to him. Certainly a good day for him personally. Hasn't played too much in the league from what I understand. I know that Ben Killip is more often than not the first choice goalkeeper there, but looks like he's been given an opportunity and certainly took it at the weekend.
Oxford, number two, Jack Stevens. Some decent stops in a 2-1 defeat to Peterborough.
Yeah, always going to be a tough game for Oxford, but he's stepped in for the cup game. So you've got Simon Eastwood, who's been a mainstay in the league for the last few seasons, really consistent top League One goalkeeper in Simon Eastwood. But yeah, Jack Stevens stepped in a few times now for cup games, really making a name for himself this season. Naturally, he'll be frustrated. And this will be the same for a lot of goalkeepers that come in for the cup games. When you are knocked out, the realisation that that might mean that your number of games are limited for the rest of the season, potentially. But certainly with Jack Stevens, again, another goalkeeper that's technically sound, very powerful. Certainly a save top right that he made that's worth pointing out.
Three names for you.
Go on.
Ante Yokola of Bristol Rovers, Marek Steck of Mansfield, and Jamie Cummings of Stevenage.
Jamie Cummings, we'll just touch on, made a brilliant save in the shootout. Of course, they won the penalty shootout in their game. A couple of goalkeepers that were victorious in penalty shootouts. He was one this weekend. Yokola, two brilliant saves for Bristol Rovers. And I know we were touching on a couple of saves he made off air and rose to fame for a couple of saves he made in the FA Cup previously. I believe that one where he tipped it round the post that was probably over the line. But fantastic save from last year's competition. But again, made a bit of a name for himself with a couple of great saves here. Marek Steck, vital saves. Huge win for Mansfield away at Sunderland, and there was a save in particular down to his left, and it's that beautiful save where you get down fingertips and it squirms, that's the word I'll use, it squirms around the post. It's lovely when you make one of those saves, so rare that you make one of those saves, but the fact they did go on and beat Sunderland 1-0, huge save, huge performance.
You have to feel for FC United of Manchester goalkeeper Dan Lavercombe. Doncaster won the tie 5-1, but three of the goals were deflections.
Yeah, he got a little bit of stick. So this game was live on BBC and he got a little bit of stick for it. Might have been the fourth or fifth where he's looked to play out. Again, another one where a goalkeeper looking to play out and he got caught. It might actually be more of a clearance, this one. But even that goal, which was one of the three deflections, and so frustrating for him. And they actually played some really good stuff. FC United of Manchester played some really good stuff. But Doncaster far too strong for them. And certainly no chance on the majority of the goals here.
You mentioned playing out from the back there. Three more names for you here. Lawrence Vigouroux of Leyton Orient, Grimsby's James McKeown, and Solihull Moors goalkeeper Ryan Boot all did a similar playing out from the back error at the weekend. Ryan Boot, it was quite an obvious error, passed straight to the Scunthorpe player. James McKeown was more so playing out from the back to the centre-back, who was then dispossessed. That was in their defeat to Dagenham and Redbridge. They scored as a result. And Lawrence Vigouroux was way out of his goal. Proper Edison, Allison, Pickford, whoever you want to call it. But poor positioning from the defenders. Right. I don't really feel like they've done him a favour here.
I want to touch on this one because he does the first bit brilliantly. He reads the game well and he takes on the striker, which he does successfully. And he then looks to play it with the outside of his boot to the fullback. And it's a poor pass, which has then allowed the striker to have the shot at goal. But even from that position, what, 30, 35 yards out, you then have defenders between the striker and the goal. And the defender seemingly runs out of the way. You need to watch it. It's like something from FIFA when FIFA has a glitch and the defender seemingly runs out the way. Almost like, I'm not helping you out here. So if I'm Lawrence Vigouroux, I am absolutely fuming with my defence not to do me any favours here. And in the end, of course, it does go down as a goalkeeping error, but certainly given no favours whatsoever.
Two more very good saves worth mentioning. The first one from Harry Burgoyne. We'll get onto that in a minute. And the second one from Eastbourne Borough goalkeeper Franco Ravizzoli. Lovely story this. An Argentinian goalkeeper who's come over. He's good friends with Sergio Torres. Torres steeped in FA Cup history. Rose to fame when he scored a goal for Crawley Town and eventually got them a tie against Manchester United nearly 10 years or so ago now. But he was plying his trade in the lower leagues before getting his big break for Wycombe Wanderers. That is what Ravizzoli is doing under the tutelage of Torres at Eastbourne Borough right now. He had a good performance, made a good save from Sully Kaikai down to his left in their tie against Blackpool.
Yeah, brilliant save. Fingertips onto the post, got down very sharp, got the rebound. Fantastic save. One of those where his movement was very good. Turned inside. It's that small goal to small goal. For those that, you goalkeepers don't know what I mean here. We have the small goal on your near post, which he defends well. Then he moves back onto the line, gives himself reaction time and gets down very quickly to his left to tip it onto the post. It's a brilliant save.
And Burgoyne, someone that you know well, Shrewsbury's victory over Cambridge. And this was a vital save. Corner came in and I don't know how he's done it. And that has been the reaction from everybody who has seen the tweet, which is on our Twitter feed at the moment.
It's a ridiculous save. And yeah, someone that I work with very closely. And Harry's really kicked on this season. He's had to fight for that number one shirt. Had a couple of lone goalkeepers come in. And he's now starting to establish himself more and more. And this save in particular, at 0-0. Again, they end up winning 2-0, of course. So this save at 0-0. And he's effectively done the splits on the line. It's hit his foot and gone up over the bar and away. Unbelievable save. I don't know. He couldn't have got there with his hand. There's no way he can get there with his hand. But this is a save of the very, very top draw. Definitely worth looking if you haven't seen it already. It is on our Twitter page. Definitely worth watching.
Do you know what I love even more than the save on this one? We did put this out on Twitter and the reaction we got was great. But it was more so the accounts that got in touch that I never knew existed. And I don't think I ever thought would exist. Shrewsbury Fan France.
Okay.
Right, so we've gone global there. Shrews Fans USA.
Right.
Even further afield. Shrewsbury Town, Brazil.
Brazil.
Unbelievable. Who knew?
I'd love to know how big these fan clubs are in these countries.
Well, let's have a look. Shrewsbury Fan France. Yeah, not that many followers. To be fair. But still, there you go. There are Shrewsbury Town fans in these countries.
Is it like a lone fan in Brazil who set up a fan club in Brazil? He attends his own meeting every week.
Oh, there is one more as well.
Oh, go on.
Isn't there? Stockport County.
Yes.
Poor old Gavin Batsunu, the Rochdale goalkeeper, has been done by some class football from John Rooney, brother of Wayne.
I've watched this several times and I don't know what the goalkeeper can do differently because it's a brilliant, brilliant
finish. It's a great goal.
This is that one where, is this a goalkeeper? The old Neil Sullivan back in the day. At what point does it become a goalkeeping error? At what point does it? For me, it's not, because this is just the fact that the ball breaks in midfield. You have to have a starting position. You have to be outside your box effectively when the ball is in midfield, because you're waiting for that through ball. You're on the front foot. So if someone gets it and they have a snapshot like this in such quick time, you cannot drop that quickly. So for me, absolutely no error from the goalkeeper. It is brilliant, brilliant football from Rooney.
Right, Richard, that is it for another week. We might be back at the end of the week, but of course it is International Week now. England are playing on Thursday, so we won't do our usual Between the Sticks on Thursdays. It will most likely be that we're back this time next week.
Indeed, and that's 100, done and dusted. I think it's fair to say that this particular episode, we've named more keepers than ever before. We've had mistakes, we've had great saves, we've had a go at referees, we've had a go at commentators. I think this has been the most action-packed show today. A nice way to top off 100.
Absolutely. It's been very, very good indeed. We've mentioned it before. We are now on Patreon. And if you want to listen to an extended version of this very podcast, you can do that by visiting patreon.com/goalkeepersunion, where Rich talks a bit more about the number of goals that have been going in both the Premier League and in Europe so far this season. He also, don't you, Richard, speak a lot about Jordan Pickford and the England squad named by Gareth Southgate.
I do indeed. And just a big thank you to those that are on Patreon. We make it well known, of course, in order to hire the studios that we use, in order to keep this going in the way that we are. It is our own personal expense. So just a massive thank you to those of you that are supporting us and allowing us to continue to do this. We want to continue to build this. We've got lots of plans, don't we, Matthew, in terms of more fan interaction, getting other experts in the world of goalkeeping involved in this too, as well as the feature interviews and weekly Between the Sticks. This is hopefully just the beginning. Even though it's number 100, it is just the beginning.
It is indeed. Remember, you want to get in touch with us as well, at GK Union on Twitter. Hello@goalkeepersunion.net. This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away!